Translation and purport are really meant to transport us in either dimension. So it's good jargon we should adopt maybe in ISKCON now. We have so many from past. Okay, transport. In that planet of Satyaloka, there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind, and therefore there are no anxieties, save that sometimes, due to consciousness, there is a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service, who are subjected to unsurpassable miseries of material world. Purport. Prabhupada seemingly doesn't touch much lines, but goes straight to the point here. Foolish men of materialistic temperament do not take advantage of successive authorized knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is authorized and is acquired not by experiment, but by authentic statement of the Vedic literatures, explained by bona fide authorities. Simply by becoming an academic scholar, one cannot understand the Vedic statements. One has to approach the real authority who has received the Vedic knowledge by the disciplic succession. As clearly explained in Bhagavad Gita 4.2, Lord Krishna affirms that the system of knowledge as explained in the Bhagavad Gita was explained to the sun god, and the knowledge descended by the disciplic succession from the sun god to his son Manu, and from Manu to King Ikshvaku, the forefather of Lord Ramachandra. And thus the system of knowledge was explained down the line of great sages, one after another. But due the course of time, the authorized succession was broken, and therefore, just to re-establish the true spirit of the knowledge, the Lord again explained the same knowledge to Arjuna, who was a bona fide candidate for understanding due to his being a pure devotee of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita, as it was understood by Arjuna, is also explained, Bhagavad Gita 10, 12, and 13. But there are many foolish men who do not follow in the footsteps of Arjuna in understanding the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. They create instead their own interpretation, which are as foolish as they themselves, and thereby only help to put a stumbling block on the path of real understanding, misdirecting the innocent followers who are less intelligent or Shudras. It is said that one should become a Brahmana before one can understand the Vedic statements. And this stricture is important as a stricture that no one shall become lawyer who has not qualified himself as a graduate. Such stricture is not an impediment in the path of progress for anyone and everyone, but it is necessary for an unqualified understanding of a particular science. Vedic knowledge is misinterpreted by those who are not qualified Brahmanas. Qualified Brahmana is one who has undergone strict training under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. The Vedic system, Vedic wisdom, guides us to understanding our relation with the Supreme Lord Krishna and to acting accordingly in order to achieve the desired result of returning back to Godhead. But materialistic men do not understand this. They want to make a plan to become happy in a place where there is no happiness. For false happiness, they try to reach other planets, either by Vedic rituals or by spacecraft. But they should know for certain that any amount of material adjustment for becoming happy in a place which is meant for distress cannot be benefit the misguided man, because, after all, the whole universe with all its paraphernalia will come to an end after a certain period. Then all plans of materialistic happiness will automatically come to an end. The intelligent person, therefore, makes a plan to return home back to Godhead. Such an intelligent person surpasses all the pangs of materialistic existence, like birth, death, disease, and old age. He is actually happy because he has no anxieties of material existence. But as compassionate sympathizers, he feels unhappiness for the suffering of materialistic men. And thus, he occasionally comes before the materialistic man to teach them the necessity of going back home, back to Godhead. All the bona fide acharyas preach this truth of returning home, back to Godhead, and warn men not to make a false plan for happiness in a place where happiness is only a myth. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So appropriate purport for book marathon here, Prabhupada comes. We'll come this later. Just go a little bit back now into verse itself. In that planet of Satyaloka, there is no neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind, and therefore there are no anxieties, save that sometimes, due to consciousness, there is a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service, who are subjected to the unsurpassable miseries in the material world. So even this verse points on individuality, consciousness, which never be destroyed, consciousness. See, point out that we are always individual in every line. So Prabhupada's main meaning here. It's interesting verse, very interesting, like talks about a small particle of creation. It's a kind of wonderful, wonderful creation, like in all speck of creation, entire creation, just only one aim. Just one aim, to facilitate to all living entities to go back home, back to Godhead. Entire creation which is created, you know. And then at the same time, Krishna enters and facilitates our residence in this material world. And so, in all ways, creates base for everything for us here. Living condition, ingredients, platform, ingredients to manipulate, to try to be happy here. Elements, entire universe is created for just one single purpose, to somehow redeem conditioned souls. Like, and only twice of the Vedas we can see in every speck of creation Krishna's merciful glance. How is amazing. Like lately I'm studying pretty much about cosmology. I have some plan in my head. But in incredible, like, studying a little bit excerpts from the Kurma Purana, Vishnu Purana, Vayu Purana, then from Sadaputta's books, of course, fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, many lectures on the topic. And of course, wonderful book, Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in the second part, describes all this amazing creation. I was just taken back. I didn't kind of pay attention to this before, like especially when you study fifth canto, it's very complex. But now with different eyes, when I look this, how merciful Supreme is, like every aspect of the universe somewhere there, just every aspect is meant for that, to facilitate our coming back home, back to God, just for one reason. It's incredible. Like, and no one is left out. No one. It's a plan, like supreme intelligence of the Lord. He has a plan. Wonderful plan beyond scope for even Brahma, everyone, to somehow inject some benefit for us. See, injects guidance, injects the Vedas, injects the Yajna. If you're just a little bit intelligent, we can make use of it to elevate ourselves just for one purpose. And even those, even hells, apparently horrible place, is meant for that. Those who are demoniac, it gives them chance to go down, hit the bottom, and start from, how they said, plain slate, from beginning, to get a chance. It's incredible, yeah. I'm amazing. Yeah. And one thing about this, which we comment through, it's amazing creation, at least in a sense of cosmology, that their clash of views, what the universe is, like, you know. And what is one, if one takes one views only and try to throw down the throat to somebody else his views and create conflict, friction, because entire universe is multi-leveled. You cannot just have one approach to it. No way, because so multi-complex levels, different dimensions. So, for example, like, you know, any empiric philosophy, any science. It takes one approach only. Physical. They try to find the physical laws for it and go into that line only. But how much you can get some, they get some, you know, meaningful discoveries, which are small fraction. And even that, physical laws, that often contradicting each other, because there are many levels of that also. And then, you know, tend to think either is one or the other. It cannot be both. Only like, for example, quantum physics. They tap a little bit into something which is bit not as they thought, like this famous, you know, is a wave or is a particle, like a double slit experiment, how they call it. This kind of tap in something, they don't know what is. But then this implied that there is a consciousness. You know, if you observe certain object or phenomena, acts one way. If you don't, it acts different way. So there's a consciousness there, like Akhandadi Prabhu does amazing research and preaching into that field of consciousness, that this is source of creation. But then one may think that, okay, our consciousness can influence the matter. That means actually we are gods, because by our consciousness we can manipulate matter. But it is not the case again, because there is one phenomena and this other phenomena. Sometimes in certain circumstances we tap into one observation and sometimes to another, which very often conflict each other. So therefore you cannot explain in this straight approach creation or God or the origin of anything. That's a kind of an interesting that those who are crude materialistic scientists, they go this path only. Everything can be proved by experiment, you know, by elements, but materialistic science. And then anywhere where there is possibility they're going to meet the God, they avoid that. Because if they're really honest, it's doomed. You cannot be, but you will admit that God exists. You cannot. So therefore they shift and try to find a way. And they can discover small fraction only, nothing else. Like, so this conflicting views of one side or the other, even in our ISKCON, is the earth flat or is round? There's a strong evidence of both. If you take one view, it's unnecessary grudge, unnecessary like anger, even offenses. We have to take both. It's round, but it's flat also. It's so many other things. That's the kind of thing which... Therefore, those who have elevated consciousness, they can see, they can reconcile this. Because, like, for example, I was just during this study, you know, there is like strong evidence that Earth is actually flat. And there's strong evidence that it's not. Like, GPS satellites work perfectly. They're designed exactly to make orbit around the Earth. Because if Earth is flat, they will just fall on the ground. It's very intelligent. Design there, you know, to exactly match, you send the satellite in the orbit to match exactly its velocity, speed, and then Earth's, they call gravity, whatever. And I see if it's too slow, it will be pulled out. It will go from orbit. Or it will hit the ground. It will get attracted by gravity. So exactly those satellites go in and the late newest ones, they have small engine inside and some fuel so that can every one and one, after some time they can adjust themselves not to come out from the orbit. They last for maybe 10 years and then eventually they hit the ground. But they're designed for flat earth, around. Now there are many things. But then there is a experiment they made. I think last year they finished. They took them a few years with special laser beams to see what the curvature of the Earth if is. And then they went in Hungary in a big Balaton lake, and then one lake in Sweden, because large enough. You basically it took them these independent researchers backed up by, you know, we need special equipment, special materials to send a laser beam across the sea, across the lake, with a target on the, like, you know, 10 miles away. So anyway, so point is that according to science, that the Earth is carving down. Every 1 or 2 miles goes 4 inches down, and then sea water or any large water following that curvature. So this was the main principle for that. So they spent about 2 years or something to examine, to measure that from every weather conditions. They make sure that this calculation is all right. Even on the frozen surface of the lake, humidity must be perfect, visibility, so many factors are involved. So they did this. And then on the end of the year, they got final calculation for all this. But no, even one confirmed that air is round and it's open. Further research needs to be done. What is? So interesting. So there's a backup for all. So, but point is, if you are like a samadarshana, if you know the truth, if you elevate your consciousness, you can reconcile very, very, very easy these two. You know, it's round, but it's also in the higher dimension, is a flat, is round, is incredible. Like if you take entire, yes, yeah, Bhumandala, but in the middle is Jambudvip, where we are situated. It's Mount Meru. South of Mount Meru is so-called Bharatavarsha. You know, and then Bharatavarsha, somebody called Earth. It's just a tract of land with 8 different varshas. One is so-called, our Bharatavarsha is place of fruitive activities, where karma is acting, where Varnashrama Dharma is enacting. Other Varnas, there is no Varnashrama Dharma. In some Varshas, there is some kind of similar division on 2 or 3 aspects which has different names. But Varnashrama is on Bharatavarsha only. Interesting, only karma, law of karma, works on Bharatavarsha. We in tract of land. So this is the last portion of Jambudvipa, middle section of Bhumandala. This is a Bharatavarsha. On the very south, touching the salt ocean, the Bharatavarsha. Varnashrama is there, karma is there. And then, of course, it's further divided into 9 khandas. And Bharat Khanda is the place where we live. So what is that? Is that around or globe? There's no point even to discuss. Maybe it's both. Or maybe it's triangle, or maybe it's teddy bear shape, or so, whatever. It's not, this is a waste of time, such a waste of time to what is, you know. It doesn't matter. So, where I was, I just lost my track before that last. Anyway, even devotees kind of fighting what is, but necessary. Anyway, like this verse also contradicts also. If you take a scripture, it's full of contradictions. What verse says here? There is no bereavement, there is no death, there is no misery, there is no unhappiness, nothing. What they say? Apunar, what's it? Punar. What's his name? Bhagavad Gita verse. Apunar something. What's the verse in 8th canto? Oh yeah, all planets are placed in misery. There is a birth and death. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, yeah, Punar Vartino Arjuna. He says that. So again, it's a contradiction here. It says, creation is full of contradiction apparently. What's that? You know. No misery is in Satyaloka. Every planet has a miseries. He is also a merchant. As person is elevated on the earth, is elevated to the higher planets, people on higher planets such as Brahmaloka, Chandraloka, etc., fall down to the earth if they are not up to transcend it. And he is also mentioning if they don't cultivate Krishna consciousness, then they come down, they don't stay. And also he's mentioned it's the 3 types of Brahma, Jnani, Bhakta, and then Karmi. If he's Karmi, he comes back to material world. If he's a Jnani, he gets in personal liberation. And if he's a Bhakta, then he can transcend that. But even if he's Bhakta, but he thinks that he's equal to the Supreme, and then he goes to Mahavishnu, and then on second creation comes back again to get again post to Brahma for further perfection. This is interesting. So all those denizens also, they go with Brahma wherever he goes. So in that sense, there is a misery there, but maybe not grows as we, like for example, even on Svargaloka, There is no birth as we have, such a nasty, bloody, painful birth. They just appear there and immediately grew on their adult size, ready to enjoy. Next moment, that's a place for enjoyment. Neither there is an old age. They just have their garland, they go to the beginning, welcome to heaven. It's for you who are, never gets off old or fades, smells. But when it starts to fade, you are in panic. That's a suffering. It's a panic. You are not old, but you, for God's sake, it's gone. Soon I have to go. And then, as I said, mentioned like in Puranas, when one feels that his garland is fading, getting old, he starts to cry, man. He's crying. No, it's all gone, all finished. And then by crying, takes shelter of this teardrop and merges with the rain and it falls on the ground and even our process goes into earth, goes into the grain, goes into semen again, you know. But before that, one enters because he's not eligible anymore to stay in the heavenly planets. But there is big stack of piety still, earthly calculations. And then he goes, you know, one of the 8 varshas in Jambudvip. Well, these 8 varshas are kind of heavenly region in this earthy planet, Jambudvip. And they enjoys for 5 to 10,000 years, remnants of his pious credit there, enjoys his heavenly realms. And then Bharata Varsha is so crucially important, either Bharata Kanda or planet or plane, whatever. So important. It's that one crucial planet in entire of universe, of our Brahmananda, is that's a kind of pivot from which you can, like a springboard, you can be elevated or degraded down to lower system due to the low karma. It's so important. So somebody think, oh, humanity, your entire race, just the biggest joke in the universe, in the creation. Those who are disappointed and fried with whatever is happening. But earth is so important. You have such a chance. Even demigods want to come here because they have a chance to transcend everything. So that's important to planet earth. And what are their miseries? Yeah, as I said, old age. There is no old age, there is no death, but there is a death, yeah. Like for example, Brahma's body is made of intelligence. So it doesn't have a gross body as we, to be painfully extracted from. But when he gives up intelligence, his body is made of intelligence. So that's called death. Like in third canto, I think, in Srimad Bhagavatam, during process of creation, Brahma left his body several times. Prabhupada said, if one gives up intelligence, it's considered that he gave up his body. This is only Brahma case. I can give up my so-called intelligence, but I still have this gross body. But when Brahma does, he gets another body. This is after he ran after his daughter, he kind of, and then more other things, you know, kind of miscalculate in his creation. So there is a death. And it's amazing, it's the highest planet, it's such an incredible enjoyment there in Satyalok. And Purana says that after that, there are coverings of universe. And these coverings of universe, now it's just some kind of matter, subtle, or whatever, just like a gassy covering. In each of this covering of universe, there's amazing opulence, much, much more greater than Brahma Loka. And in each second covering, enjoyment is greater, and body is as suitable for that. And in each one, there is a presiding deity worshipped by special, for example, I said, earth covering, first one. There's a Varahadeva's presiding deity there, and Bhumi, Mother Bhumi worships Varaha there in that covering. But opulence is incredible there. And then as you go further, like water, this is like kind of subtle water covering, larger, even more enjoyment, more happiness, more opulence. And as you go on, earth, water, fire, and then air, ether, mind, finally covering false ego. It's incredible comparing to all other coverings. And it's all trap there for conditioned souls or for those transcendentalists to get sidetracked and get stuck even in coverings. As mentioned, I think in Vayu Purana, that between each of these coverings, there is a slit like a razor blade through which pure souls passing without being hooked on any opulence of those coverings. And then he can enter Brahmajyoti. And then further, Vaikuntha Loka. That means he's mentioned like how your body, yogi who progresses, how his body changes. He gives up earthly body, he gives up watery body, he gives up earthly body, he gives up ether body. Like how he progresses, it's incredible. Like, you know, like you can see only Krishna within this. Like how, you know, and in one sense, it's also a trap for us. Entire universe is a trap. But he says, like devotee, if you cultivate devotional service, you know, there's all chance you're gonna succeed. There's special protection there. Okay. And another, we are not just thrown in this entire creation, like Krishna just opens the door and kicks you out. Okay. Go there and find a way. Bye bye. As I said before, creates entire platform for us to exist here. Even those, like even everything which you see, trees, nature, water, is all living entities. And some of living entities must become those rivers, trees, grass to facilitate our life here. Is incredible. And it expands, each aspect expands in our heart everywhere. And then we go now to purport. That all misery is only compassion. Why? That only misery is in Satya Loka. It's compassion for fallen living entities. And Prabhupada goes straight from the beginning of purport on that as a crucial point, which involves preaching, of course. And then Prabhupada, I mean, we may not have compassion for living entities, really. I don't know, can I extract any? But Prabhupada has. So to support his mission, that's kind of what we can do only. You know, each one of us somehow have to become acharya. I can just pray that somehow Krishna extracts enough compassion for living entities in me to support somehow Prabhupada's mission, which is now not the case. So preaching means simply to spark somehow attraction for Krishna and other living entities. Some way, so somehow some attraction. That's called preaching. So some small something, you know. Wrap it in something which they will digest, they will take it in some way. Therefore, this preaching comes there, of course. Entire Vedas are preaching, and you see. So elaborate, a huge way around entire creation, as I just mentioned. You know, entire creation is like a bridge, preaching, you know. Keep it, get more intelligent, you know, go here, go there, try. It's just incredible, you know. Even speck of that attraction, if somebody develops, that's more than they ever did in entire lives. Jash Radha Gokulananda, Jastra Mashman. Because it's spiritual. Whatever you do is not spiritual. So when you preach, like preaching, yoga, meditation, it's all material. Yoga is material, meditation is material, well-being is material, everything. But this peck of attraction to Krishna, that's what is spiritual. So therefore, it's most important. It goes in directly in their highest, inexhaustible bank account. It's like a plain cards with all zero cards, you know, like with zeros. And then I give you Ace of Spades. And you win. That's what devotee is supposed to do. Give Ace of Spades. The Ace of Spades. This is a song. Anyway. And not by force, of course. It's like, that's another thing, you know. They should feel that I don't come to take you something, take away, force you to something, canvas, but just gives you option among so many you have. That's a preaching. Give you option and then it's up to you. And Prabhupada said that a recipient must be qualified, or must be pure devotee as Arjuna. Does it mean that anyone you preach, if he's not pure Arjuna, you'll not take it? Prabhupada says there. But Prabhupada elaborated in one of the purports that This is required by Acharya. Arjuna was like Acharya, who's supposed to disseminate this knowledge. So Acharya must be pure. And only then he can oversee, you can view, you can administer properly knowledge, like a shepherd and sheep. Others, gradually. It's not that, you know, everybody take Krishna consciousness. You know, everybody, you know. But they be favorable, they be engaged properly. Therefore, Varnashrama is so crucial. For all, you know, it's not that everybody will take at once. But if you organize society, it'll be favorable to Krishna consciousness. That's like, or chanting Hare Krishna. It's not like only ISKCON devotees join and we chant for their so-called pure name. We're gonna give holy name. If name will spread all the world, doesn't say how, which society or something, you know. So, that's the kind of thing. And otherwise, he'll create misinterpretation. Those who are not up to devotional service, they don't know what's the final goal of life. They have their own interpretations and misguide people. Prabhupada says there in purport. They misguide. Knowingly or unknowingly, they have their conviction. They take people away from final goal. See? And we have to go in opposite direction. Yeah. And Prabhupada said, planning to go back home, to go to, will surpass entire existence, material existence, all pangs. It will surpass. There will be no anxieties when you understand that. And even in our life, devotee may struggle, devotee may situate it properly. They may so many things. We know, it's a reality. It's, you know, something bugs them, something. Unhappiness, unsatisfaction, whatever. But even speck of attraction to Krishna is deep in us. So this will kind of pull you out. Whatever it is, you may struggle, but this is saving grace. The small speck of attraction. You will override all things, make you fortunate. Yeah. Just to accept this final destination, yes. That you know, that's only matter, actually. If Krishna said, that's only reality. So even if devotees may struggle, but deep down, there's a platform. You're not lost. You know that. Doesn't matter how struggling you may as a devotee be. If not, then, you know, you're absorbing something else, like, you know, material life, everything around. So to induce this by thinking, by reading, reminding ourselves, constantly chanting, of course, discussing, you have to constantly revise that. You have to constantly feed that link, even if it's small, finding ourselves and then try to present to others, you know. If we get distracted, as we do all the time, every 20 seconds, then, you know, it may take you away. Then, you know, one distraction leads to another, to another, to another. That's a link with spiritual world is chanting. Like a main thing. What is linked to this material world? What Prabhupada said, checklist of life. I not say, you say. The most strongest means to keep you in bodily platform of life. Prabhupada said, checklist of life. You say it, I not say. Initially, like our link is weak, but as you add like more rope to the strands, you continue, two strands, three strands, like a strong rope. Eventually you can hold the old huge boat. I don't know if you've ever seen in the bay. Huge boat, massive, with strong rope, like storming, is shaking, sometimes it gets sink also. But with strong rope, you're not lost. So this is like what chanting does. It doesn't matter how difficult it is, if you have this link with the chanting, you'll surface again. You'll not be lost. Nothing is lost. Nothing. Therefore, like, I have to say this again, like, chanting, focus-wise, it's so important to focus on chanting. Even, I mean, I've seen devotees, even advanced devotees, sitting chanting and then reading something, like, learning shlokas and whatever it is. I just don't like to see this scene. That means, like, chanting is a background sound, is not main focus. It's not main focus. If it's not main focus, then it's secondary thing. You may learn the shlokas, learn something, but chanting is on the background, like a noise. It's kind of a parade also. So you have to give yourself, you have to allow mind to be consumed by sound vibration. You don't need to think anything. Like, for example, now there are so many japa workshops and think of this when you chant, think of this when you chant. It's just distraction. Prabhupada said, that's a question of mind, hear and chant. For us, in the beginning, stick to that. You know, hear and chant. Like, oh, let me try this technique on this japa workshop. You try, oh, it didn't work. Let me try this one. Discard is all distraction. Hear sound vibration. Just hear, vibrate. Let it saturate you completely. Completely. Let's consume your mind. Stay there. You'll see the effect. You'll be more happy than any other technique you use. Totally let your mind be consumed by chanting. Vibration, chanting. And eventually, picture will clear. You know, you'll be able to see Krishna even. That's it. No, just be distracted at learning or hearing something or whatever. So chanting means chanting. When you do one thing, do one thing. If you're reading, just read. If you chant, just chant. If you eat, just take prasad. One thing. No, just decide the half-half, like. Our mind is geared like that to so many things. You're already dragging us all the universe. To learn to be focused. Ekeha kuru nandana. One point direction. Our progress will be very slow. Definitely. It's very slow. You know, you move, but there's so much things, you know, like a big weight. You're dragging, you know. You can go a certain distance, but, oh, God's sake, you know. So this is like crucially important to be focused, whatever you do. Ekeha kuru nandana. As soon as, you know, mind takes you somewhere, be alert. Drag it back, Prabhupada, like enchanting. As soon as you see mind takes you somewhere, bring it back to sound vibration. So like if you have a mood of just hearing chanting, begging, you have an appreciation for Krishna. In that very small, simple attitude in chanting. What's the question of not have taste for chanting? What's the question of, you know, don't feel benefit of chanting? You will want to chant. Be here and now and chant and then appreciate. That's it. Okay, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrīmad Bhagavatam ki jai, Śrī Śrī Rādhā Gokulānanda ki jai.